This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the morning run, and you're with Julian Ng, Lin Mak, as well as Wong Xiaoning. It's April Fool's Day. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Good morning,
how
Julian.
Are you guys? Xiaoning, how are you? How
was the weekend? I'm shocked because I'm actually in the studio at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Welcome. You haven't been in here at this point yet.
Welcome to our lives.
Calm chaos, guys. Calm chaos. That's my tagline for BFM.
Okay. Did you know that April Fool's Day has been celebrated by several centuries by many, many different cultures? And my most favorite theory is when in France they switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar. I mean, why would you do that? I'm still on the Julian calendar. And then all these people were confused because of that switch, right? Because their New Year's Day used to be on April Fool's Day and they were still celebrating. So they were the butt of jokes at that point in time. That's my favorite theory by far.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't mind going back to the Julian calendar if it only means that we'd get a holiday today because it would be a New Year's Day.
Yeah, but that would mean you would miss out on all the other holidays, right?
Or has it got to do with the fact that it's the Julian calendar, which is your name, Julian?
Exactly.
That's his
only
reason.
I'm literally still on the Julian calendar.
Okay, every day is a holiday for you.
Every day, it's something else. Okay, guys, so what have we got today? Have we got something fun?
So, yes, we're going to be talking about jackfruit. So, I don't know if either of you like to eat nangka. Apparently, this is a thing that Westerners have just discovered, and they can't quite decide whether or not they like it yet. So, we're going to be talking a little bit about that.
And then we're going to talk about what it takes to be the 1% around the world. And can you be a member of this 1% club?
Okay, then we'll be getting a lot of advice from Xiaoning about how to get there, right?
Yeah, I dream. Dream and wish.
And coming up next, the very, very curious case of people who read the Wikipedia for the movies that they're going to watch. I'm not sure why people do that. And if you want to join in the discussion, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to come back with more discussions. And in the meantime, here's Sweet Home Alabama by Lynyrd Skynyrd, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're with The Morning Run, Julian Ng, Lin Mak and Wong Xiaoning here with you. Now, we all know of that one person who always reads a synopsis before they watch a movie. Apparently, this is particularly true of horror movies. From The Cut, which research says that we like watching horror movies because they allow us to experience that sense of danger without actually putting ourselves in dangerous situations. And people who enjoy horror movies tend to be more open to new experiences, but people who are more sensitive to stress still want to experience that sense of danger, so they read the wiki pages instead. How weird.
I
say that because I'm a fan of horror movies.
You said how weird, and I was just about to jump in to say that, I do this, so I guess I'm weird. But I think, yeah, for me, it's definitely the fact that I don't like surprises, and I generally don't like horror movies. So especially when there is a hit that everyone's saying, you have to watch it, I'll be like, okay, I want to know what happens, but I want to know in a kind of within an environment that I can control, which is my computer screen. So I will open up the wiki page and read it, and then decide if I actually want to throw myself into the cinema to watch it.
So that's like a safe space for you.
I don't even watch any horror movies at all. It's too scary. I live alone and every creepy sound frightens me. So
you're not open to, according to that research, open to new experiences. Is that true?
No, I'm not open to horror movie experiences at all. But I confess, I do read Wikipedia pages for everything else.
Okay.
Especially, really? Yes, especially if it's like a 10... episode series, I read the Wikipedia page first to just think about whether I want to invest my time in that series
I
start.
I hear you. And for very complex movies like Game of Thrones, right, where me personally, I can't remember the background of every character. That's an excellent Game of Thrones wiki page, but it's full of spoiler alerts. So you got to bear that in mind before you read that. But horror movies... I mean, I'm a guy who loves horror movies and who, have been on the lookout for good horror movies for the longest time because they come in very few and far between, right? And so recently I saw a very good one called The Haunting of Hill House. So that was a full season worth of, I was so glad that I could enjoy it for the entire season.
Why would you scare yourself purposely, Julian?
I don't know.
What do you get out of it? I'm just curious.
I don't know. I'm weird that way, I guess. Not all the other people, but I guess I'm weird. And there was this article, like really good write-up on that particular show, right? Haunting of Hill House. And it just basically said this. If you are thinking of whether you should be afraid of Haunting of Hill House, then this article will put it straight. Just a summary, it's very, very scary, right?
Okay.
And that's in the first paragraph, and it says it all. Very good article, actually.
So The Haunting of Hill House is a good example, I think, for this discussion, because I read the entire synopsis of every episode before I watched the actual series, because I'd heard, like you said, I'd heard that it was really good, and I actually, a part of me really wanted to watch it and find out what it was about, but I was very reluctant to subject myself to jump scares, to horror without just kind of without some kind of support system. So I read everything.
Do you know the ending? Have you watched it already?
I've watched it. And saw
it subsequently.
I saw it subsequently. So I read everything and then I watched it. And I don't actually think it detracted from the experience at all. It just made me a little bit... it made me able to deal with the fear a little bit better because I knew what to expect.
But doesn't that take away from watching the horror show in a way? You kind of know what to expect?
Not necessarily, because I think Haunting of Hill House is a really well-written show. So, you know, there's a lot of information to digest.
But it's not like the Poltergeist kind of horror show, right?
These,
they're a little bit clever,
because
that's
one movie. So this is interesting because it's a format that takes horror to like an entire season. Like you got like almost 10 to 12 episodes of it, I think.
11, yeah.
Yeah, so that experience, especially if you binge watch it, which I didn't because it's a lot to take in, that experience just prolongs, and that's what's great about it.
So you have this elevated sense of fear for days.
I wasn't fearful, actually, to be honest. I was just like, wow, this is something that's quite good, because you don't come across good ghost stories. It's a ghost story. It's not a horror show, because to me, horror is like cheap thrills, right? Mm. With a lot of makeup and a lot of gore. And that has got no challenge. But a ghost story affects you more psychologically. And that, to me, is more fun. but the other thing is that I just think reading synopsis for any kind of movie at all is just too much spoilers. I don't even read alerts, right? But all I do is I check out ratings on Rotten Tomatoes or on, IMDb, right? And... anything that's above 90% or on Rotten Tomatoes or 8 on IMDb, I watch it.
So okay. Do you read reviews?
After I watch it.
Oh, only after. Yeah. Okay, I read after. Everything before I make the decision to watch it.
Yeah, likewise, I think.
Yeah, because I don't want to spend like $18 in a cinema and be disappointed.
Cinema? What's that? Like, there's so much to watch at home.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I do think, though, that I don't know how you guys feel about... So, like, you mentioned certain horror is, like, just gore and makeup and cheap thrills. So I don't watch those at all. Those are the kinds
of
movies...
Those are a waste of time,
I feel that a little bit. Obviously, I'm sure there are people who disagree with us. But things like the Saw movies, I refuse to
Texas
watch those.
Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacres. I refuse to
you
watch
know,
those, but I will
is,
read the Wikipedia
that
pages.
That one is interesting because it goes into the psyche of that person, right? So that's not bad as well.
Can you identify with that person?
I'm not saying anything at this point in time. I reserve comments. The other one, Psycho, for example, Alfred Hitchcock, right? That's really good. Because
that is really scary.
Yeah, psychologically scary. All right, we'll be coming back with a discussion on rich people after this, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're with The Morning Run here on April Fool's Day. Julian Lin and Xiaoning here with you. Now, no income level benchmark is cited as often as the 1%. From Bloomberg, this shows the reality that the 1%ers are not created equal even among their own kind. You may need the combined income of, for example, 11 1%ers from India to equal the income of just one in the UAE.
It's quite impressive looking at this graph that Bloomberg has in its article, particularly because I noticed that while the UAE is at the top of the scale, the second highest is Singapore. So Singapore's one percenters apparently have an annual pre-tax income of $694,000 a year. So that's I feel like I need to make an obligatory Crazy Rich Asians joke here, but then
please do.
No, but it's interesting. The other interesting thing from the article is that obviously what you spend on is also different. So luxury items may not cost the same from country to country as well.
Yeah, for example, in Monaco, you spend $120,000 on your annual wages of your live-in nanny. $120,000. And in that
no
same...
No way.
Yes.
Seriously?
Really?
Yes. And the entry point for a home there, for this 1%, is only a cool 26 million US dollars, guys.
Okay,
so there's the 1%.
I think I want to leave my job now and go to Monaco. What language do they speak in Monaco?
French.
Is it French? Okay,
yes.
I can't go there. But they speak English as well.
They do.
But yeah. Hey, it doesn't sound half bad. $120,000 a year.
Exactly. The only glitch is whether they trust me with their children or not. That's a different issue because I'll feed them with horror stories, right?
Like you let them watch all of the horror stories.
I think for $120,000 a year, Julian, you would do anything you could to
including
safeguard
give
these
up,
kids.
Give up watching horror shows?
Maybe.
Yeah. And it's interesting with the concentration of rich people in, for example, UAE and Singapore. I mean, I guess UAE is all the oil rich
oil
out
money,
there.
Yes.
And in Singapore, it's a confluence of all the rich expats from around the world. So they've got the creme de la creme, right?
Mm. Yeah, I can imagine.
Living in Singapore. Whereas you see the averages in the US and all that. I mean, we're speaking like we're so rich here, but you look at all the averages from the US, UK, Australia, that's averaged down by the local people. Even, for example, like in the UK, $300,000 to hit the 1% in the UK is half of Singapore.
Yes, it's an indication of this very sophisticated economic term called the Gini coefficient, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
which inequality.
Shows inequality in terms of wages. Maybe that's also due to the higher tax. For example, you don't want to be the 1% in France.
Mm-hmm.
Because you pay 50% tax.
Marginal tax rate of 50%.
Yeah. And maybe you want to be the 1% in Singapore, for example. Tax rate is just a little bit above 20%. But
correct.
Best of all, UAE, 0%. So whatever you make, you take home.
So that's why the UAE is top of the scale when it comes to annual income
zero
of your 1%ers.
Zero taxes, that's mm-hmm. the way to go.
Yeah, but you know, the rich get a lot of advice as to how to evade taxes.
It's called tax planning, Julian. Mm.
Tax planning,
evasion.
Not
yes,
tax. Tax evasion is illegal, but tax planning is legal.
Of course it's legal.
So you can save a lot of taxes with your tax planning.
Yep. Yes. And I think this is something that we should be talking about more soon because it's tax season isn't it?
Yeah. No, but the other thing also is, do you really need to be part of the 1% to be happy? I know you're going to say, hey, of course we do, right? What are you talking about? But actually, for a place like Malaysia, for example, it's quite easy to live. The cost here is pretty low cost in spite of the grouses right now that we hear about rising cost of living. But mm-hmm. you don't really need a lot of money to live in Malaysia, right?
Well, it depends on your lifestyle. If you're a millennial,
totally.
Yeah, if you're a millennial and you want your $5 coffee every
Hang
day,
on.
Maybe
Here we
you
go.
Need more money.
Hang on.
Here we go.
Just because I have a 5 ringgit coffee does not mean that I
know. Maybe they should do a Gini coefficient in the hipster cafe, right?
Yes.
Who can afford that 5
well,
buck
Well, having
coffee.
Their avocado toast.
Hey, 5 buck is very cheap for a coffee, you know, like everywhere else it goes for like between 8 and 11 bucks.
I will also interject to say that millennials have to take what we can get because everything else, you know, we've kind of inherited a really terrible, terrible economic environment.
Correct,
so
Charlene.
Give us our 5 ringgit coffees.
I drink the office coffee. Julian drinks the office coffee.
I make my own coffee, which averages down to like 1 to 2 ringgit.
I value my taste buds as well. So, you know, the office coffee for everyone listening out there is vile.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess the 1% also depends really like where we go back to asking where is this 1%? Mm. You probably don't want to be the 1% in Syria, for example.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
War torn. You probably get spending all your money on bodyguards, weapons,
maybe probably
fortified
part
homes.
Of the political elite in Syria. If you're there at the 1%, and this also raises another issue, right? The plutocrats, the 1% of the 1%. That's a level that's like way beyond anybody's league, because you're talking about billionaires. You know how those statistics that are produced by Oxfam, 50 people or something ridiculous like that controls half of the world's wealth. Right?
Yes.
That's a level that we don't even want to think of, and that raises more issues than it answers, right? Should there be so many extremely rich people in the world? What are they going to do with all their money? And I know that people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and so on are giving away all their wealth. So they say they're giving it away by starting up charities and foundations. Still, the question arises.
But I still want to be the 1%.
You still do. Yes. I think you're there already, Xiaoning.
No, long way to go.
Okay, we're coming up to the news, and we'll be back with more discussion after that. And to take you there is Boogie Wonderland by Earth, Wind & Fire, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run. Welcome to The Jungle by Guns N' Roses. That wasn't an April Fool's joke. Our producer, Roshan, actually chose that song. That is an actual song. Now... Julian, Lynn and Xiaoning here with you. Very controversial article that I read over the weekend from The Guardian about the Nangka. And it also received a lot of social media backlash. And let me tell you why it was controversial. Here are some lines from the article. 5 years ago, jackfruit was just a spectacularly ugly, smelly, unfarmed, unharvested pest plant native to India. Some people ate it, but only if they had nothing better to eat. Kerala alone disposed of 10 million nankas a year. So this is what caused people to go really mad about this article, saying that it smacked of colonialism.
Yeah, I think it reminded me a little bit of that. Do you remember a while ago there was that cooking show where there was a Malaysian contestant who made rendang? And the
fried
judge,
rendang.
Yeah, the judge was like, the skin is not crispy. It has to be crispy. And it's like everybody, the internet kind of exploded, because it's like, well, clearly you don't know what rendang is actually supposed to be like. So that's what I get from this. Clearly this woman who wrote this article, she's writing it from a white person's perspective, right? Completely.
Yeah,
she's
absolutely.
She has not taken into account the fact that nangka is a perfectly common, acceptable fruit to
delicious,
eat here in the
healthy.
East. Delicious and healthy, exactly.
Well, I think, in this article also, the nangka that they're referring to is not the nangka that you and I find in our supermarket, right? It's actually the unripe tin stuff, which I have to I'm just trying to imagine what it tastes like.
I've eaten unripe nangka. I must say they're not that bad, but to the Western palate, maybe it would get a little bit weird.
But this is the tin stuff, Julian. I mean, we have the unripe stuff in our lemaks, which is delicious.
Yep.
We make curries with it. But tin stuff,
So she's eating the wrong nankas.
Yeah, she's eating the wrong nanka in the first place.
To write an article like that seems very insulting and very offensive to the people of India, let alone the rest of the Asian world.
Yeah, who've been eating it for years.
We definitely have. And I mean, I don't even really like nanka, but I read the article and I was quite offended, just because it's the way she describes it, right? So she describes it at one point as taking on a carrion appearance after about 20 minutes of stewing.
That's right.
And she says, and I quote, "I found it pretty disgusting." I'm like, why would you put this in an article unless you are really looking to offend someone who likes nangka? And there is a whole segment of the population that you clearly did not consider when you wrote this article, because probably you were just writing it for other people who
So this is very interesting. Do you think that it's the writer's right to critique a kind of food that she has a right to say, I don't like this and I like this? Or are people being too much up in arms and being too sensitive, being affected by a critique like that on a fruit like nangka?
Yeah, I take the view that people are being a bit too sensitive. There's lots of food out there that I don't like, and then people poo-poo me. Like, for example, I don't like blue cheese. And the French thing is the height of cheese. I think it's pretty disgusting.
So you don't think that you'd be offending the French or the Swiss if you say that the cheese is smelly, and I... I just discovered this. It's not a cultural offense.
No, it's a personal thing, I think, at the end of the day, right? I mean, you don't like this tinned jackfruit, you just don't like it.
Yeah, so that's partly what I feel like as well. Like, if you don't like something, you are completely entitled to your opinion. But at the same time, she's not just expressing an opinion to her friends. She's writing an article for an international and highly accredited website like The Guardian. So I feel like at least someone in the hierarchy here, like an editor, should have pulled her aside to say, hey, you know, we do get people from Asia also reading The Guardian.
So now we have to be politically correct when it comes to fruit too.
No, take into account people's feelings. Don't just assume that your own perspective is the only one.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I think so. As a food critic, I'm not sure if she's a food critic, but I think she's a vegan trying to write out some vegan recipes using the nangka. But as a food critic, you must be aware of cultural provenances as well, because mm-hmm. if you write about something professionally, then you got to be aware of where that fruit came from, that particular food came from. I mean, if you totally write about char kway teow and you're saying that this is really vile food, obviously it's very cultural offensive as well. I think the same, I mean, it's okay if we said that we think that cheese is smelly, but if mm-hmm. we were a professional food critic and we said that, I think that would be inappropriate, I guess.
Maybe it's inappropriate. It's not inappropriate to say you don't like it, but it's inappropriate to not know more about it before you comment
Correct.
On it.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
You should know mm-hmm. the history, the importance of it, how it is used culturally, the history of it before you write a long article poo-pooing it. Maybe that's how she should have gone about it.
Correct.
I think it's fine to say you don't like it.
Absolutely.
Because we don't like everything, right, that we eat.
So let us know what you think about it. Should it be nangka or jackfruit? And do you find nangka delicious? And even whether you find this article offensive, WhatsApp us at 01878-9899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back with more discussions after this. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're with Morning Run, and that was You Shook Me All Night. All Night Long by AC/DC. Julian Lin and Xiaoning here with you. Local actress Maya Karin has some fashion advice for you. Stop Instagramming hashtag OOTD because it's bad for the environment. OOTD being outfit of the day.
Yeah, so I think she's talking about the people who buy a lot of new clothes specifically to have a different outfit in every Instagram post or every social media post. And then I guess those clothes basically just go to waste. I don't know about you. I've heard of people who, I don't know them personally, I've heard of people who will buy outfits from Zalora, for example, to take a picture in it and then send them back because Zalora has that return policy. So I don't know whether that would fall outside of this because you're technically not throwing the clothes away. You're just giving them back to Zalora.
But it's creating a mountain of unused clothes, right? That's happening with, the international platforms, fashion platforms as well.
Yes. I mean, this outfit of the day thing has just gone crazy, hasn't it? I mean, I've got friends who go on holiday and before they've left, they already got 20 kg of luggage because there's 20 outfits for the 20 days that they're going on holiday for.
So no AirAsia for them, right?
No. Every day they have a new outfit, they take a photo and then they post it out on every social media platform there is out there. And honestly, I still don't understand. Why would you do that?
Because you travel a lot, right, Xiaoning? So do you...
I wear that same pair of jeans for 15 days till it can stand. And like three black t-shirts.
15 days?
Yes.
Okay, so it doesn't get smelly or anything?
I just don't take any photos of myself, then it doesn't matter,
I know,
does
but
it?
Smelly? Will it get smelly?
Well, you know, it don't come so close.
Okay, but yeah.
You attract the odd backpacker or two.
Yes, I do.
Be interesting to go on holiday with you, Xiaoning. Yeah, I think it is one of the, it's the changing way that people are going on holiday, right? So I guess you would go on holiday to experience the location.
Yeah, and the food.
Whereas the people who take these 20 kilos of luggage worth of clothes, they're doing it to show off to their friends, because you know you have to show that you're having a good time rather than perhaps focusing on actually having a good time.
Yeah, this brings me back to the Love My Palm Oil campaign. I know this is a long shot, but it's about your right to have some kind of upward social mobility, right? So it's not just fashion, it's everything. It's coffee, you know, your Nespresso pods. It's your right to clear forests because all the Westerners have already cleared theirs to plant their soybeans and rapeseed oil and all that. So now it's your right to have upward development. It's your right to build condos because I'm coming out of the villages and I want to live in my condos, and that has an environmental footprint. Fast fashion is your right to dress like a superstar, and therefore the Western people have done it. The white people have done it. It's my turn now. Is that a fair argument?
It's an interesting argument. I mean, I would argue that fast fashion, that purchasing clothes and, you know, to look good in order to raise your social status is not necessarily, it's not a zero-sum game. You can still be sustainable while doing that. But it takes a lot of awareness that I don't think we have as a society yet.
Yeah. We only have one planet, guys. So at the end of the day, I think we just want to have a smaller footprint, right? Just do our bit, you know, for planet Earth.
Wise words there by Wang Xiaoning. And we'll be coming back with an international market roundup after the 7 a.m. news. And this is another one, Bites the Dust by The Queen, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.